Want to expand the influence of design? Pragmatic Institute offers interactive, actionable courses for designers who are looking to contribute more strategically in their organizations. Explore our offerings such as Business Strategy and Design and Influence Through Storytelling at pragmaticinstitute.com/design.
Hello, and welcome to Design Chats, a new podcast from Pragmatic Institute, where we sit down with design leaders, practitioners, and alumni to discuss how to grow the strategic impact of design. For this week's episode, I'm turning it over to guest host Shannon McGarity, a pragmatic design instructor and one of the minds behind our design practice curriculum. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did.
Hello, I'm Shannon McGarity. This week, I'm excited to introduce Lauren Sinreich, Principal of Design Research and Strategy at Coforma and a member of Pragmatic's Design Advisory Board. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Shannon. I'm really happy to be here and to chat with you today.
Yeah, so glad to have you. And it's always fun to hear about, you know, to start with people's design story or how they got to design. And I would love to hear yours if you don't mind sharing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's fun to hear people's design stories because design has so many different origin points, I think, in when you're in this industry. And especially if you're thinking from like a strategic design perspective or design strategy perspective, you know, it's been changing over the years, right? From where design was very like specifically thought of in like, you know, an architectural perspective or graphic or interface perspective, whereas design is a little bit more about the how we do things. So, you know, I come from a not traditional design background. I started out in comms. Did my master's, went back and did school, did my master's in an environmental studies program where I learned all about like environmental economics and conservation and, you know, all economics, and did field work on kind of like looking at participatory democracy kind of approach to managing forests in rural Nicaragua. And so I had developed a really kind of strong qualitative ethnographic skill set from that work in my master's. And then I just started blending that with my previous experience of like communications and stakeholder management with this ethnographic qualitative background, moving towards the projects that were available and accessible to me. So there was a lot of like social projects or civic innovation projects that I started doing, and, you know, mixing those skill sets of strategy, story, and research, I quickly found myself doing these methods that I didn't realize there was a name for, but later came to learn that, oh, there's design thinking. And so
common. Yeah, so common how that happens, right? Like, I've been doing a thing and now it has a name. What? You know, and they're teaching courses about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I kind of like as an independent was making my way through the world, freelancing, consulting, using these skill sets. And increasingly every project I did became increasingly more design or research oriented. So.
Wow. Okay. And so it's interesting because it started in this civic and environmental space, but you made some, I guess, like your career journey or your path kind of, you know, went in as all of our paths do, probably, like, you know, didn't go in a straight line. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I would say it was pretty consistent as far as the skills I used, but how I leveraged them and what industry I used them in or sector varied dramatically, right? So after I came out of my master's, I went into environmental and social consulting. And that work was primarily in like the NGO world. The clients that we worked with were like UNESCO and those kinds of organizations. And then started getting involved in more kind of place-based work where, you know, that environmental and social thing kind of combine. And that really led me to civic innovation. So I was working with like nonprofits in San Francisco at the intersection of like social engagement and creative technology, and working with the mayor's office of civic innovation and some of those projects, or local co-working spaces that were really energizing communities around this. And then I worked in energy efficiency like in the utility sector for a private company that worked with them. And I was doing kind of like strategy and storytelling around, you know, solution building and what does the user and stakeholders need and those sorts of things. And then, you know, also worked in media and entertainment with Sony Music Entertainment is one of my clients. But then I went in-house with Bank of America and was brought into an innovation team that was being built in the Global Information Security Organization to own the customer journey process of things. And I was really excited about the team that I'd be working with and also just owning the process. Because I come from such a systems-informed approach to things, I really like getting into those kind of back-end, like figure out what's going on upstream. What is that kind of like back-end service design approach to everything? So I was really excited about that. And that's what brought me into, like, you know, the financial and global information security organization. And, you know, right now I like you said in the intro, I'm working with Coforma and working with a large federal client, the Veterans Affairs, and working kind of in like the more healthcare side of things, working on like helping develop software for clinicians to make better decisions. You know, so my career has been applied in ways that you, like, you know, when you start out your career, people would never tell you you'd have this, like, this variability of mm-hmm. of experience, right? But I think this industry, design and research and strategy, will enable that in a way that not every other profession does.
Yeah. And maybe why is that? Like, it would be interesting to talk a little bit about that, right? Like, because I think that sometimes, you know, in the world of design hiring, et cetera, people think, oh, this designer is, you know, this kind of designer, or you're that kind of, you know, you're working in healthcare, or you're working in finance, like, but designers are often very fluid and can move between those things. What, like, to what do you attribute that to?
Well, you know, I think design has both hard skills and soft skills, right? And both of those types of skills are applicable across any industry. They're not industry specific most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. Soft skills, the, you know, the communication, the putting together pieces of, like, connecting the dots, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. you know, that's applicable in any industry. Mm-hmm. The hard skills of, let's say, synthesizing data, or the hard skills of, like, pulling together a journey or prototyping something, that also is applicable across any industry, really. Yeah. So, and also just the methodology itself is, like, really designed to break down silos. So I think it's an indication of, like, kind of the mindset that it brings, right?
Yeah. And, you know, you threw out a number of kind of different capabilities or mindsets that have been applicable and that you've been harnessing throughout your career. So tell me a little bit, you have, you know, spoken about service design, or you've referenced service design and design strategy and systems design. And, you know, those are a lot of different mindsets, but all with a thread that go throughout them. I'm just curious if you want to talk a little bit about that.
For me, they feel like the same mindset.
Great. Tell me more. You know? Yeah.
I mean, they're not the same. They're not the identical in methods and approach and mm-hmm. outcomes or goals always, but, like, they're very much the same mindset. And, you know, I mentioned how I did my master's in environmental studies. And really, I think a lot of this work is informed by the work and things that I learned there in my master's program. So to do an environmental program, you have to really understand ecosystem perspective, how things fit together, what's the upstream drivers of things, what are the core causes of problems, how, and really just fundamentally how everything connects and impacts one another. And I think, you know, I feel very fortunate because I think the industry has been moving in that direction over, you know, my career. When I began, I don't know that there was as much support for looking at things in such an interconnected systems approach to things, but now there's definitely a lot of, like, demand for it and value for value perceived or gotten from taking kind of more systems or service design approach. And the reason why they're similar is, you know, from a systems perspective, like I just explained, you have to understand the ecosystem approach, that everything feeds into one another and there are cycles and there are impacts, there are ebbs and flows that result, that it can be, you know, impactful in far-reaching areas and not necessarily immediately perceivable. From a service design perspective, I think it's similar as well, because it's service design is doing something similar but delineating it from like the customer's viewpoint versus the service delivery person viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So you are understanding when you have an issue or a challenge or a blocker from a delivery perspective that is going to impact the user experience upfront, and that's going to impact your bottom line, right? And you can even take that further, like the work that I've done in enterprise systems. Service design doesn't just have to be in the consumer facing space. Like you can think of service design as in an enterprise, you have a one team is working on one thing, another team is working on another thing. And if either of those sides are not operating at capacity, at full capacity, then you're impacting the delivery in one way or the other, and ultimately impacting again, bottom line. And even if you're not considering end users of like external consumers, that will impact consumers' experience, right? Your end buyer's experience. So for me, it is all a system that I'm working through.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I wonder how the organizations, you know, because oftentimes we operate in siloed organizations, and designers do, and sometimes they have to make a case to have that broader mindset. Have you seen examples where like there have been obstacles to that way of thinking, or where that way of thinking has been in some way embraced and, you know, they've had success with it?
Yeah, I mean, to varying degrees of both. Right. Yep. By the way I communicate, I cannot sell something without communicating this mindset. It is like just what informs everything that how I do things. Right. So when I talk about a project to begin with, this is in my language as mm-hmm. how I'm informed on all of my projects. Right. And so that's kind of a starting point. So I find myself in situations that are often more receptive than not, but in an operational sense, what that means when that comes down to like the brass tacks, like the actual, like what that looks like in practice is that, yeah, there's always going to be some level of education or socialization or communication or getting on the same page that's required, right? And also there's just like an appetite, because sometimes we have a systems approach to things. You can really dig up a lot of stuff. And if there's not appetite for that, then like, you know, so you have to like, you can go very deep, and you have to really have a good understanding of what the appetite is for it. So you know what, like before you wear out your welcome of digging too deep, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you talk about appetite, I think that you're also, maybe tell me if I'm wrong, but you're talking about an understanding of the value that that kind of work would bring.
Yes, 100%. I think there's the understanding of the value, but also just like timing. Sometimes it's just not the right time for an organization to have the resources or like the cultural space or the political space or whatever it might be to be digging into it that much. But yes, absolutely a value perspective, right? You know, how do you show the value for the work that you're doing? And this has been a big conversation for quite a long time, is like, how do you show the value of design? And then more specifically, because, you know, we're talking about like design strategy, mm-hmm. how do you show the value of things like design research or that informs that strategy? And a lot of these things have these longer timeframes that don't necessarily have the immediate feedback loops that we have all connected so closely to our ROI or our like, you know, value propositions. So
yeah, it's like the lagging indicators, right? You know, so many of the success metrics that we're given are those ones that are 1 or 2 years out, and we need, you know, more leading indicators, things that are, you know, and to communicate them back to our business stakeholders and our partners, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious then, you talked a little bit about how organizations are at different stages of readiness to have those conversations or to accept that kind of thinking. I'm curious, you know, where's the difference between, you know, working in-house and kind of having those conversations and working as a consultant? What's happening there? What is that like for you as a designer?
Yeah. Well, in-house, you end up having a much more intimate understanding of the like organizational dynamics. So there's like a little bit more savvy that you can leverage in navigating these like areas of who might be concerned, who might be champions, knowing how each team operates so that you can understand what their end goals and objectives are and see how you can overlap. Because oftentimes you can find overlap. Like everybody really just wants to understand what the problem is so they can fix it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then in a consultant perspective, you may not have that intimacy, but you have the like the naivety. You're like, I'm just asking the dumb question because I'm here to ask it. Like I'm new to the space and I need to like get to the bottom of this. And there's so much power in that stance, right? And not just power in like that organizational sense, but like from an effectiveness, like you don't have to worry about sounding dumb. You don't have to worry about that I should know this. It's a really effective way to get to the heart of things. So
yeah, you and I are similar in that way. We both had those experiences. And you know, and when you were a consultant, they also ask you, in many cases, they're asking you for you to reframe or to push back or to provide a perspective that they might not have in-house. So I see that as being like one of those amazing values of having consultancy or agency experience in your portfolio.
Totally. But you know, you can do that in-house as well, because you're getting a perspective that, like, if you can communicate it and storytell in a way that really hits home, you are also doing that of being like, whoa, I did not see our problem from that perspective. And this gives me like a lot of inspiration, or whoa, you know, like there are those moments where people have like, I just did not even come at the problem like this.
Yeah. And for the last 6 months, we've been developing a course called Influence Through Storytelling. And we very much focus on applying that empathy that we apply to users and to the stakeholders that we're working with. And so, you know, before when we were talking about communicate, like the value, and they have to be bought into the value of thinking in a different way, you know, that's a communication challenge, and you have to figure out the story that's going to resonate with them to see the value in some proposed change or, you know, work that you're doing in service of the user. So that totally resonates for me, actually.
Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes we make that seem like it has to be this like really strategic story, but like you said, the word empathy, it's just like being a human and understanding what somebody's concerns are and saying, I found this bit of information that seems relevant to you and has like an open channel for communicating it, right? One of the things that I do almost in all projects is do this like end of week readout, or, you know, whatever the appropriate cadence and avenue is like, whether it's bi-weekly or end of week or an email or in like a showcase situation where we're sharing back to stakeholders regularly at the end of sprint. It's like, this is what we're hearing. It's not this formal research output or artifact. It's just, here is what we are hearing. And it is by far and large the most effective engagement mechanism that we have for people involved in the project, right? And it really helps to get people communicating on the same page.
Yeah, that's an excellent tip, tool, strategy to employ like in our arsenal of storytelling moments. I'm wondering, when you're telling, you know, those stories, or you're connecting to your audiences or to the people, your stakeholders that you're working with, and we're thinking about empathy, what values do you often find yourself surfacing in that conversation?
Definitely like transparency, open-mindedness. You know, there's something that I like, there's something about, while you want to be empathetic and understand where people are coming from, there's also something really powerful about not being too swayed by whether or not people will receive this well, because if you are in a true like strategic or like strategic role, right, whether it's like a like an explicit design or explicit research kind of position, you are not doing your job if you're filtering things for people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, the goal is not to validate in research, right? We talk all the time about how like we're not doing research to, you know, to confirm something. You're looking for places to share new ideas or like divergent thinking, et cetera, or like things that we wouldn't have thought of ourselves. And so it sounds like that's kind of one of your goals, is to kind of not care about being liked all the time in that moment. You have 100%. To kind of, you have to share difficult news sometimes.
Yeah. It's kind of like as a facilitator, right? Like you create these safe spaces for certain dynamics or things to happen. It's like, what is the safest way you can shake perception up or shake things up a little bit, like open up these places that might be constraining to opportunity or new possibility, and open that a little bit. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's probably something baked in about feedback too, right? And like, you know, serving information that is in service of the person that you're giving it to, and not like to just not to push a way of thinking because that's your way of thinking. It's like, oh no, this is actually, I think it's an art to deliver information to people that is difficult, but in service of the business or in service of them as a stakeholder.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, one, like I said, my career started out in communications.
Yeah.
So I have some experience and background with that. And it's like you were talking about the winding career path. It's amazing how these things you never thought would have been anything connected. Like, that is an important part of design strategy and research. It's like, if you can't communicate what you're finding effectively, then, you know, it's tough. But, you know, to your point, there... This is going to get like really kind of personal, like, you know, not sharing too much, but there's like, from a personal, like emotional intelligence perspective of like, a lot of times we pursue our roles and share things out or, you know, in fear of it not being enough or not being received well enough. And so we change it to adapt to other people's ways of doing things. And that ultimately, like, you know, it limits us. Then it's like the fullest way that we can show up in our roles, right? Yeah. And so there's like this theme that I have learned over the years is that like, I will forever be a person who cares like about showing up for other people in my fullest capacity and doing the best work that I can do. And what enables me to do that over the years, I have increasingly learned to not care about other things, you know, like put less emphasis on the self-doubt or the, is this the right way versus this. It's like, am I communicating this in the clearest, most effective way that I know how, and that comes out as earnest and often is can like, you know, is received as the way it's put out. Right. I think it's for me been like one of the most important shifts of mindset or perspective or approach in my career, right?
Yeah. And I see that that is also, that mindset probably requires a lot of intention. That is a finely honed, crafted skill that doesn't just come naturally. Can you tell me a little bit about intention and how that connects to...
Isn't it, what's that saying? It's like an art and like in like modernism or abstract art or anything. It's like, there's rules that you have to follow until you learn how to break the rules. Right. And like, I suppose like, so I'm an introvert. I have a very like deep empathetic vein within me. Like I have a deep research background. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of my career has been around this liaising and working with people and doing this sort of stuff. And so for a long time, you know, you start out and you're doing it for other people. And then there's a point where you're like, you know, you're maybe you realize that maybe you have the freedom that you have the skills and freedom and capacity that you didn't realize you'd had before. You've built them over the years. And so you start exploring that a little bit more and giving yourself a little bit more freedom. And each time you're like, wow, I really took a risk there. And the less I cared about the things that don't matter, the better the outcome. Right.
And
also like, you know, I think also there's something really central to values here. is that like, you know, for me, I'm talking about transparency. I'm talking about coming to the core of the problem, not putting a band-aid on things. Like I just cannot work in an environment where I'm constantly putting a band-aid on things. You know, it just drains me completely. Yeah. So there's a few of these values that like, you know, if I am not full of integrity and clearest about what I can bring, then the project suffers. You know, I'm not making clear what the core driver of the problem is or where the real opportunity is or that kind of thing. So it's, you know, through my values, how I've identified how I show up best on these projects.
Cool. And so I'm going to double down on the values talk as a coach. That is the place where choices are made, right? Like, you know, when you know your values or intentional about them, you can, you know, the outcomes are always going to be better. So I'm curious about what values that you were honoring when you moved on to your current role with the current organization.
Yeah. So I had been working independently over the last 2 to 3 years, the previous 2 to 3 years. Yes. Yes. Time is nothing anymore, right? Like, And I was doing a lot of, so I had my own practice and I would pull people in on projects from time to time, but you know, it was largely like me driving things. And the scale of projects you can pull in vary when you're like just doing, you know, an independent practice perspective of things. And also like pandemic just got really isolating. And
yeah.
And so when I started looking elsewhere, I think, honestly, I had never heard of Quiforma. LinkedIn's algorithms appropriately targeted me, because from a values perspective and a culture perspective, I have never been somewhere where I feel so aligned, right? Coforma works, you know, in the public and private sectors, private like companies, as well as nonprofits. And as I mentioned, for like governmental clients, federal, state levels, you know, and they are hugely intentional about everything they do. And it's a young organization and it's growing super fast. And of course, organizations that grow fast have some growing pains, but there is this level of intentionality around like being transparent and helping people show up as their full selves, like no matter what that looks like. And really putting in the social structures and norms, as well as the operational structures and norms, to facilitate a culture in which people can show up to do their best work, as well as like really staying true to like what's best practice from like a delivery perspective or from a design perspective. It's very mature in its philosophy when it comes to design, because it's like, it's a design informed company, right? From the start.
Yeah. And it makes such a huge difference, right? You know, going back to our conversation about like when there's traction and ability to accept change or to accept new ways of thinking and doing, it sounds like, you know, you're living in a space where that is, you know, that is just ingrained in the, you know, identity and actually in the way that the business is structured, right? Because you're bringing that to clients.
Yes.
But you know, so that's a choice that you made. It's a super intentional choice, right? I've gone in this direction because I know that I can show up as my best self and have more impact.
I mean, there was just a lot of alignment from the kind of work that they were doing, really a very rich space for me to get into like very systemic service design approach to like dig my fingers deep into places that, you know, expose the darkest of things that need a little bit of rearranging.
curious about that too, if you don't mind talking about it a little bit, like where are those places that help is
well needed? For clients, you know, I'm not saying that's specific to Coforma. I'm talking about when you're working with clients. It's like there are known ways of doing things and things accepted as part of scope of a project a lot of times. And this is also part of the difference of like working in-house versus as a consultant, right? So there's a scope of a project. And then if you start pulling on this thread, you're like, wait, upstream. If we do this, if we do what we thought the scope was going to be, we're just going to keep having the problem. And we put all this time and money into like a Band-Aid, like a kind of a short-term solution, but this is going to come up again, right? And so like, if you follow that thread, how far does that thread go? And, you know, like sometimes it goes as far as like tech debt, you know, it is really fundamentally the infrastructure that informs the data and how it runs and how you're able to refresh the data and have people have access to it to inform like a critical process in the organization. Yeah. Sometimes it's a process like a governance process thing, you know, and like, you know, governance process can be sensitive sometimes. And are people willing to do that? And so again,
not terribly malleable, actually, governance.
and to that, you know, back to our point, it's like, what's the appetite? You know, I have been on a project where they wanted to fix a huge process that was a key part of the organization. And then when it was clear, like, you know, we had done discovery and synthesized the findings and said, this was this and this was that, you know, they were really just interested in quick wins because politically they needed those wins, you know, and there were people that were interested in going deeper, but like they brought us on, understood the outcomes of the discovery, were on board for it. And then like, you know, as you kind of dig into things, it's like, we need some quick wins because people are upset because this process is like really difficult for them and we need quick wins. And it's like a real big balance or a trade-off is yes, quick wins, but they will continue to have a difficult time until you deal with underlying issues. So, you know, there's always trade-offs and there's priorities and you just, you know, I don't want to like, because I'm the person advocating always for following that thread, you know, like it's kind of funny. I was out in the garden the other day and I like to weed and I like to do some gardening. I'm like not a huge gardener, but there's nothing as cathartic and healing as weeding. And oh, I agree. Found myself like following roots of things that I didn't want to tear up. I was like, oh, I've gone too far.
Oh, this is actually a carrot as opposed to, you know, this crummy weed that's invasive. Yeah, no, yeah. Or it's tangled in.
And so that's a safe space to do it. You don't want to do it like that in an organization. But like, you know, there's it's not wrong or right. It's like what's right for the organization at the time. Like under just making sure that everybody's on the same page about the trade-offs rather than these like implicit versus explicit decisions. Like that's something that, you know, I think we've talked about, I've mentioned maybe to you before about like, I really care about a little bit less about what you design and work on as more about how you approach it.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of the things that are unsaid that like lead, like the implicit decisions of how things are just accepted or without being on the same page of like, there's these risks and we're all accepting these risks to move in this direction. You're like, you know, distributing some of that risk onto somebody else or, you know, those sort of things. It's as soon as you kind of make it more explicit, it's a lot easier and better to move forward and just getting clearer on those trade-offs together rather than kind of leaving it kind of under the rug.
Yeah. That's, that resonates for me, you know, having been working on that storytelling course too, right? Like a lot, when you rely on, you know, a lot of us don't realize what's baked into the explicit message. Like we can say a thing, but you know, our stakeholders are going to take away dramatically different things from that explicit message based on their perspective. And so we actually probably have to do a little bit of work to think about that. And you know, that work is communications work. It's probably facilitation and discussion work. But it's also just proofing our own messages and making sure that we're actually saying the thing we mean and that it's gonna hit our people the right way.
Yeah. As you're speaking, there's two tracks from that like really resonate. You know, one, it's like when you're developing a product or a service or something, it's just a documentation aspect. It's good practice to document everything, right? As fully as you can. So you know, nobody's left in the dark. Nobody finds out about a risk or a concern later on that they didn't know about, that kind of thing, right? Yeah. But also from a storytelling perspective, you know, it's very a human nature thing is that all of our brains have come together in very different ways. And one connection or word may mean something slightly different than another. And a number of those just slightly different words string together can actually be interpreted into something so different. And it's the fundamental human conundrum. Like, you know, making sure that what we're saying is received as close to the original message as possible. And, you know, you can get pretty freaked out when you think about the risk and every time you communicate something.
Yeah, no, you can.
So again, it comes back to that, like, I'm doing my best as intentionally as possible, and I have to let the rest go.
I mean, yeah, at some point you kind of have to jump out of the plane and hope the parachute works.
Exactly.
But also I think there's something about feedback loops and making sure that something hits or doesn't hit and building that in so that you're not throwing something, a message, an idea, advice or, a proposal over the transom without having that like conversation about what's truly there and helping people understand like what it is your intent was.
Yeah. As you're saying that, one thing that just came to mind is so often in the design profession, or at least in a research perspective, a lot of times we'll use this, like, let me see if I heard that right. And like, you read that back, right? You mirror kind of thing. Yeah. And we do that to understand that we're hearing things as accurately as possible. But, you know, it's a really interesting thing if you flip it on the head. I've never done this, but like, I'm inspired to prompt the person you're communicating to and being like, what did you take away from that? And doing that more of a practice, right?
Yeah. And it's probably tricky to get it exactly right so they don't feel they're being tested. But I think amazing to be able to say, hey, I said a lot of things.
Yeah.
What hit for you?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like what actually was your prime takeaway from that scenario?
Yeah.
I know that.
Yes. I love it.
Cool. So we're probably heading up on time here. You know, is there, if you had, you know, advice for folks that might be living in, you know, a specific space, you know, maybe they're living in that digital design space and they're actually looking to think more about service design or systems design. Do you have any advice for people moving in that direction?
Yeah. you know, I think it depends on like the personal inclination. For me, that was always an inclination. So it was an easy kind of step towards and to connect all these thoughts. But like, yeah. I think, so one, if you're inspired by a systems approach to things mm-hmm. or service design, you know, a service design class is always helpful. Sure. You know, a strategic class is always helpful. Yeah. But, you know, it's really interesting to start following these like adjacent areas and connecting the dots, right? Or things that don't feel like they are immediately adjacent and actually you can take a lot of learnings from. You know, it's that theory of, Albert Einstein would always say when he was working on a problem, he would go play his violin and the problem would get solved for him as he was like playing the violin kind of thing. And so there's this like real value to exposing yourself to other forms of thought and other theories and ways of doing things and even your ways of doing things applied in different practices and in different areas that can help you start connecting the dots in ways that you hadn't understood. And I think really the fundamental bit of understanding systems is starting to understand how things operate when you take them outside of your comfort zone. Out of what when you're no longer used to, like when you're in an environment where you're not as comfortable or not as used to or taking things as given, and you put yourself in a new situation, you can see from a new mindset or a new like perspective, oh, this usually happened when I was in this situation, but this is happening differently here. And then when you go back to the place that you're comfortable, you're like comparing it to this new situation and you're seeing all these new connections that you wouldn't necessarily have seen before. And I think it is like it's a practice that we use in design, right? Like designers, depending on the project, designers will go like observe nursing teams and how they operate really quickly, right? Or these kind of adjacent scenarios that can give you insights for unique needs, but very different applications. And right. So I would say just like the exposure to, you know, it's hard to identify actually sometimes those things that are like adjacent needs, but very different application. So if you can identify something that seems like it might be relevant, great, explore it. See if beekeeping can teach you anything about like organizational strategy or something, you know? Yeah. But sometimes it's just following your interests and making sure that like your personal world is robust and variation and exposure to different things in it.
Oh, I love that. That's a good way to close, I think. Thanks so much, Lauren, for taking the time to speak with me, for Pragmatic Institute's Design Chats, for designers and design teams who are interested in carving out more influence in their organizations and contributing more strategically, seeing those systems, explore our learning experiences at pragmaticinstitute.com/design.
Thanks so much for having me. It was really great to chat with you.
Always. Hope we can do it again.